Get off.
Alrighty. Good evening, and welcome to the March 5th Community Services District Meeting. Would you please rise and join us in a pledge of allegiance? Chris, would you lead it?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Carol, can you call roll call, please?
President Simon.
Here.
Vice President Steele.
Here.
Director Graves.
Here.
Director Pease.
Here.
Director Wiesen.
Here.
Thank you. This brings us to public comment. The public may address the board on any issue within the board's jurisdiction which is not on the agenda. The public may comment on any item on the agenda at the time that item is before the board for consideration. Any person wishing to speak must come up, speak from the podium. There will be no dialogue between the board and the commenter. Any clarifying questions for the board will go through the chair. Any public comment? I will dispense with public comment. Thank you. Presentations. Rick, do you think we should move Gregory and let the sheriff come through first because they've got work to do? Is that okay with you, Gregory? Okay. I'm going to switch this, and we're going to bring in our agency reports, and I'd like to bring the sheriff's department up right now. Thanks, Greg. I figured they're on the clock.
Crime,
punishment,
paid expenses.
I heard a rumor that they arrested somebody. The kids break into the cars.
It wasn't kids.
Oh, you're kidding.
Sorry. Okay. We'll talk about all that.
Thank you.
So just so you guys know, you're getting more papers than usual.
Yeah.
We've included, normally it's just reports that have generated, our calls that have generated reports. This is calls for service plus calls that have reports written on them.
Oh, great, thanks.
Thank you, sir.
So I'm Deputy Scheffner, one of the resident deputies for Discovery Bay. I'll just go over our monthly stats. We had a total of 447 calls for service. We had 10 arrests this month. 4 were regarding narcotics, 2 warrant arrests, 1 domestic violence related arrest, 1 sex crime related arrest, and 2 drunk in publics. We did see an increase in residential burglaries. A lot of them related to cars that were left unlocked. People going into the cars, taking the key fobs for the remotes, for the garage doors, opening the garage door, and stealing from inside people's garages, making instead of just a theft from a vehicle, turning into a residential burglary. So that kind of accounts for the increase in stats. And just in regards, we had one street in particular that got hit with, I think there's like 8 or 9 cars that got broken into, several garages that got broken into as a result of the cars getting broken into. We do have some very good leads on all that. Basically, we had someone with a stolen iPad that was able to track it for a short period of time to a location in Vallejo. We followed up with our detective, getting in contact with Vallejo detectives, and they actually made an arrest on someone regarding a stolen vehicle, and some of that property that was stolen in our community was found in that vehicle. So right now we're just trying to, there was a bunch of property that was recovered, and apparently Vallejo was experiencing the same thing. So right now our detectives are working with theirs to help kind of connect all the, you know, click all the dots, cross the T's, dot the I's, so we can relate that suspect to all of our cases. Is there any questions?
What night did we had a break-in on our street on South Point on Monday night. They got my next-door neighbor's car. They took his, they got in, he left his car open, they got everything out of it.
So I believe this is all on the 25th.
Yeah, 24th, 25th.
Yeah. So it was like at, we estimated between about 2:30 and to 4 a.m., I think on the 25th. Mm-hmm. So that's
morning.
Yeah, Monday night to Tuesday morning. Okay. So most people, some people didn't even realize till Tuesday afternoon because there was just stuff taken from the glove box, but nothing, you know, the car wasn't broken into, so there was nothing really noticed. So
that's
just kind of a reminder.
That's what happened to him. They don't use the car. If you open the door, everything was gone out of the car and laying on the floor. So
yeah, and that was some of our time frames were even larger because they didn't drive the car since like Sunday, and then Monday passes by. So all these cars were parked out in the street or in driveways.
Yeah, so it was.
In one of the reports, we have we made a map to
give you an idea as to where some of the burglaries happened.
We can't, can you get the microphone? We can't hear you all.
Good evening, Lieutenant Beltran, Sheriff's Office, Delta Station Area Commander. In one of our reports, we made a map to give you an idea, pinpoint as to where the burglaries happened during that time frame. And as Deputy Scheffner stated, many of these thefts occurred from unlocked vehicles and some of them from unlocked residences, front doors that the suspects were able to walk in. So just a reminder, no matter where it is that we live, gotta lock your stuff and get your valuables out of your car. There was also a series of vandalism that happened over there off of a golf club drive, Spinnaker. 3 to 4 tire slashing, no suspects, no leads that happened during the night. And there's also a little map plotting that as to the area of where those vandalisms occurred.
Any questions?
Just a few things to follow up on as well. Prior cases, on the 26th of January, this is going a little bit back, there was a suspicious device found over on the trail between Yacht Club and Bixler. That suspicious device was picked up by the reporting party, brought over to the residence over there on Yacht Drive, and then we were called, bomb squad came out, detonated device, found out to be a pyrotechnic device. Just a reminder as well, if you see something similar that looks like an explosive device, pipe bomb, whatever it may be, please leave it where it's at. We will take care of it. We will cordon off the area and call the proper resources to dispose of that. There was also on February 1st, the palm trees were set on fire. We have a juvenile identified, and that case has been turned over to the fire investigator for disposition.
Bill, you have questions?
Yeah, I did. I had a similar, I have friends of ours who had a residential burglary. It may have been front door left open, people went in, whatever. Thinking kind of ahead a little bit, I know that you provide us the reports, et cetera, and I know that the news media, wherever they are, has access to that and can inform the community. I was brainstorming a little bit with some others. Has the Sheriff's Department ever thought about putting in some cameras? Because we've got one way in, one way out. The ability to put some cameras up there and just kind of see traffic, and then if there is somebody saw something, you could go back and kind of look and try to catch the vehicle leaving the area. Is that in discussions at all? Or
it has not been in discussions, and I know that models after some cities, some areas that have high crime rates, such as the city of Richmond or Pittsburgh, city of Pittsburgh, not a bad idea. It would take some, definitely a lot of coordination, a lot of effort, a lot of financial planning, and also all the utilities that go along with that, and to see who would monitor the cameras and who would be in actual custody and control.
Correct, yeah, but it...
But definitely something worth considering.
It was actually, several years ago, it was quite a debate. And we looked at the pros, we looked at the cons, and the cons outweighed the pros, because one of the problems that we had is, if a guy drives down Discovery Bay Boulevard, you get 1,000 calls a day, if something's missing out of my yard, go run the tape. Well, there was nobody to man the tape. There was nobody to take the expense of repairing it when it broke. And then it came down to, if a car's driving down Discovery Bay Boulevard, and he says, well, maybe that's the car, you can't go to the guy's house and say, did you break into a guy's house in Discovery Bay this afternoon? Because he's going to say, no, I did not. I was visiting somebody. There were so many cons to it that we just kind of...
There was actually about 3 meetings that were very, very well attended, probably 100-plus people that met over at the elementary school and discussed this whole... Pastorini was behind it, right?
They put a lot of money up. They put money up trying to buy cameras, and by the time we waited, we couldn't do it.
It just... the logistics just didn't work, right, Virgil?
Quite a while ago.
It works well in these areas of high crime rate and violence, because most of these areas have drive-by shootings, and you have a suspect vehicle identified, and we can go back to the cameras and look for that vehicle matching the description. In a community like this, where a lot of popular crimes, some of them happen on foot, it would be a little bit more difficult to narrow down.
All right. So, in lieu of cameras, possibly more soldiers on the streets, if you will, which
all
is
right. We would love that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's down the road somewhere, maybe.
We would love
Let's hope it's not needed.
Yeah. Virgil.
My street was one of those break-ins, a rash of them on the 25th, and two of us had cameras pointing out, and one of them picked up a female there, and I thought it was a pretty good deal, as long as they can identify the female, and if they went to the Belay or whatever other address, if she's in there, then, hey, I got her, and so forth. But it is the residential ones are great. The only thing is these young guys don't know who has them. That's the only problem.
Right.
And just to kind of walk you through regarding that video. So that initial video we had was not the best quality, but taking a poor quality and we were able to find a stolen credit card used at Safeway, narrow the time down, and using that video, we were able to determine that a car coming in, because we don't know exactly, this was at the fuel station, exactly what pump they came in, but kind of taking the general shape of the vehicle, we were able to get a better description. So cameras always do help, but it's gonna have to be including a bunch of other information.
Just pieces of the puzzle.
Exactly. So we were able to piece that initial video from a residence, along with the Safeway video, along with the Vallejo detectives making that arrest, taking a photo of the suspect. We could kind of confirm that it's pretty likely that the female that we have in our photo is the one that they contacted. Again, it's not the best quality ever from Safeway, but it all helps to add to everything. So we always encourage residents, please get cameras. And point one to the street. Don't just put it on your driveway because, like Lieutenant was saying, a lot of times they approach on foot and then we got nothing. So,
I have a second question, if you don't mind. Was the iPad, is that an application that's within the iPad, or is that something within the iPad that allowed you to trace it back to the label?
So, this iPad had the cellular device, you know, so it wasn't just a Wi-Fi.
Oh, okay.
And I believe that's how they tracked it. The gentleman that had stolen had his tech services from his work do it. So I don't quite know how it's done. I know there's, you know, find my app.
You have to have a program on it. It's called AirWatch.
Yeah, AirWatch. And that's where
you have to find my phone.
And the thing is most of these suspects are kind of becoming aware of this, and they're quickly shutting them down. And from what I understand is that they're turned off. You won't get a location.
No, it doesn't work. Yeah, it doesn't work. It's off.
And again, the location's not exact. You know, we've had many cases where iPhones have gotten stolen because, I mean, kids are walking around with a $500 phone. It's likely that someone's going to probably steal it. They leave it out somewhere. And we can't always track it to a specific house, but sometimes we'll just go door to door in that area, and that's been successful in getting some of this property back to some of these kids that have lost phones. So, again, one of those tools that helps us. Not perfect, but that helped connect us to Vallejo, which is now connecting everything else back. So,
thank you.
Any other questions?
I just have a comment, just kind of curiosity. Six stops at the same place for loud noise. They were kind of slow learners, or?
Can't hear you. Could you turn your microphone around, Torch?
On the loud noise, there were six stops to the same place, almost multiple dates. Were they kind of slow learners, or that just seems kind of?
So from a legal standpoint, a noise ordinance for the county is kind of very difficult to enforce. We actually need someone to sign like a citizen's arrest on it, and all the calls we get are almost always going to be an anonymous caller. We can go out there and try to scare them a little bit, convince them to turn it down, but ultimately it's going to take complaints from multiple residents who are willing to say that, yeah, I want to file, you know, I want to sign a citizen's arrest for them, because, you know, certain cities could have a specific ordinance. As far as I know, we don't have anything short of citizen arrest.
Along that line, that's very good information for the general public to know. Is there a way to, through your information office or yourselves, to contact some of the reporters for Discovery Bay Press or whatever, and maybe just do a little article or something talking about that?
He's on vacation right now, so
yeah.
See if they could write
a couple articles along that, along with the safety tips, so, you know, make sure your door's locked. We've had some robberies and things, I think.
And for the most part, when you have those problem houses, a lot of times, you know,
the same people.
It ends up being
same,
a rental.
Same people every other weekend.
It ends up being a rental property, and they're able to write letters to the owner, and often that will end up getting rid of the problem.
Right.
Because the owner's ultimately responsible. So it's a little more difficult when it's renters because, you know, unfortunately we get a lot of houses out here that are constant party problems. Yeah. But like I said, we get the anonymous callers complaining about it. We can't really follow up with anything. So I'll talk to Tony and see if we can publish something.
Even if you had a little, you know, one pager or something, and you just went to three houses down and three houses on the day you were out there, and just put those on their, you know, on their doorstep, might generate somebody to actually make a complaint.
And for these problem houses, you might want to consider, and we could consider as well, educating people on neighborhood nuisance suits, coming together and filing actually a small claim suit against the owners of rental property.
Right.
Or something to consider as well.
Mm-hmm.
I just have one more thing to add, if you guys have one more minute. Just a reminder, as we're always spouting out, please report suspicious activity. On, I believe it was Thursday after we had all these burglaries, we got a report of a U-Haul truck parked over on Newport Lane. Talked to the caller. Initially, she was hesitant to want to report it, but rolled over her head, decided to call. Turns out both subjects in the vehicle were on probation. We found one had a warrant, one had Xanax, Schedule 4 drug, which is a narcotic. So we were making a good arrest off of that. So again, we always encourage people, call us and report anything. And even if you think it's nothing, let us figure that out.
Was the van empty?
They were sleeping in the back of it, but initially we thought it might be related to the residential burglaries we had, and we thought maybe they're coming back to clean up, and that is possible. But at least now they know, hey, if I come out to Discovery Bay, we need to be more careful. We can't be so, you know, blatant to just park a U-Haul truck and expect no one to find out what we're doing out here. So,
Rick, did you have something?
Yeah, this is great information. Thank you for providing this other packet. I noticed that under on page 11 of 22, under patrol requests, you've been hitting Regatta Park and Cornell Park pretty regularly. How's that going out there? Is the are you shooing people away, or are you running into situations?
For me personally, I'm coming in contact with the same people, but we're making it our part to kind of be a nuisance to them, to encourage them to go somewhere else. Unfortunately, until we were able to get Discovery Bay to be the owners of that park and change that curfew, we're still coming at an issue where we still have to be careful with contacting people if they're just out of the park just because they, you know, they're driving a certain car and whatnot. But anytime we have a reason, we're going to go up there, at least contact them. Sometimes just a consensual encounter. But if they are doing anything, they know they're going to get caught because we're constantly, you know, I'm trying to spend 20, 30 minutes at a time there.
Do you need access to the parks? Do you need to drive through the parks? Do you think that would help your patrol?
Regarding park, I'm instructing my deputies. If they've got to make a phone call, if they got to write a report, just park in the parking lot, make yourself visible. On this calls for service, you'll see on various pages where the deputy has put themselves out at Regatta Park for patrol request, suspicious subject. You're going to see a lot of these addresses, locations being Regatta Park. And they're going to be in the middle of the night. You'll see the timestamps, 3 o'clock in the morning, 2 o'clock in the morning. So I've told my deputies, the resident deputies and the beat deputies, to make themselves visible, because after speaking to Mr. Howard and Barry, we followed through with that request.
Thank you.
Good
job, man.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
California Highway Patrol. Good evening.
Good evening, board members. Officer Thomas, the Highway Patrol. For the month of February, some stats. We had 4 arrests out here in Discovery Bay. 3 of them were DUI related. 1 was for a person driving a stolen automobile. We had 2 collisions out here. I know one of the collisions was DUI related. It happened over here by the Valero hit and run collision. I was out there on that one. For the area, we issued 47 cites. A lot of the cites I wrote were over Newport, which is, you know, not a shocker for everyone. Speeds are still an issue out there. Predominantly, most of the sites that are written in Discovery Bay are speed related. After that, stop signs and registration tags and stuff. With the weather warming up, we all know that we're going to start seeing boats and such like that. And with St. Patty's Day coming up, if anyone has a suspicion that anyone is driving under the influence, call 911. Hopefully we have an officer in the area. If not, we can get the sheriff to run over, stop the person. We can come out and hopefully get determine if the person is under the influence or not. Any other issues that you guys have questions or anything?
Pretty quiet. It's going. It's been pretty quiet.
Or something.
Is 47 citations low?
47 citations was about what was written last month. It's been a little bit higher. When I was working the beat out here, it was a little bit higher.
So I thought.
And stuff.
Any questions, Marianne?
No.
Bill?
Chris? How does the Balfour thoroughfare going from Discovery to Brentwood? How's that traffic flow? And do you see any higher incidents of accidents on that road?
The number of incidents of accidents have in-laws up on that road.
Yeah.
So you're probably seeing my car up once in a while. Accidents have declined on the roadway. Speeds have declined on that roadway. Still get speed on that roadway.
Yeah.
If people are 10 over on that, they want us to ride speed on that roadway. So 65 up, it's game. That's in fair weather. If it's inclement weather, rainy, they're wanting to hit that roadway 5 because of the lack of shoulder.
There's no shoulder on that.
But the speeds have decreased. Kids that first get their licenses, now that's an issue right there. I've got them going 85, almost 90 on that roadway, and it's just like, that's, can't do that. Yeah. I don't know what the plans. I keep hearing they're going to expand that roadway.
Hopefully widen it someday.
Yeah.
Any questions from the public? Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate
thanks.
It.
Thanks.
East Contra Costa Fire, Chief Henderson.
Good evening, Board. Hugh Henderson, Fire Chief for East Contra Costa. Before you have our monthly operational report that went to our Board of Directors on Monday night, during the month of February, there were 496 calls for service within the district. Our average response time in the district was 6 minutes and 58 seconds. In the Discovery Bay Byron area for February, there were 69 calls with an average response time of 8 minutes and 7 seconds. Probably the biggest news in the district, which most of you may have seen in the Contra Costa Times today, Board had its Board of Directors meeting on Monday night. There was discussion moving forward with a parcel tax for June. Board, after some lengthy discussion, voted 4-5 not to move forward with a parcel tax in June. They've directed staff to come back with some funding alternatives, some staffing alternatives, and also to review some of the public comments that came back from our mailer that went out in February, looking at such areas as consolidation, suggesting that maybe there could be some kind of GPA function between the cities and the district on service level. So that would be the direction we'll be taking this month as we move forward. You know, the hardest part for the Board when they were making this decision was that our firefighters paid for a survey of what people felt about a $100 tax or $98 tax. That support level was about 54%. And even after some educational component of that survey, the number didn't change. It stayed right at 54%. The district did send out, and hopefully you all received, a mailer from the district in the month of February. There were about 41,300 mailers that went out across the district to residential homes. And we received about 800 of those back within responses. 600 by mail and about 200 electronically. We had our website and our Facebook page set up to take responses in there. You know that there's good news out of the survey that 75% of the people surveyed said the district's doing an excellent to good job in the service and providing an interview. So not good for passing. The results weren't good for passing the parcel tax, but the service that we do provide and what our people do day in and day out is good work. So I'm sure as I come back to your April meeting, I'll have a lot more to report of kind of the direction the board's looking at. You know, I think you're going to see a benefit assessment re-evaluated. You're going to see a parcel tax in November evaluated also. It's going to be just a, you know, an interesting circumstance to get people to feel that they have the need to need additional fire service.
Chief, can I ask you a question?
Sure.
When they did the survey and they got the response, you said they got 800 and there was 800 responses to the survey?
Now, to the survey they did, the scientific survey that the firefighters did, I believe they did polling of 400 registered voters. What we sent back on our mailers, we got about 800 responses back on the mailer.
And how many mailers did you send out?
About 41,300.
So when they did that mailer, did they anticipate a certain response, or did this come anywhere near the response they thought they'd get, or no?
Actually, it came back a little higher than our consultant thought. He thought we'd be somewhere in the 5. He says normally a percent, percent and a half on a mailer, because unfortunately mailers look like junk mail sometimes.
Yeah.
And we came back just about 2% of the people coming back for that. We've had a few more trickle in since Monday. you know, but basically kind of had some of the same comments across the board. You know, people are pretty anxious about paying any additional taxes right now.
Any questions, Chris?
Any communities talking about taking on their own fire protection?
No, because my belief is it can't be done any cheaper than we're doing it. I mean, if you go back a couple years ago, the city of Brentwood did some research while we were doing that. At this point, I haven't heard any further from there.
I appreciate your help. That's a tough battle.
You know, this time compared to last time, you know, one of the things that we did last summer, early fall, was, you know, contacting other agencies to see what kind of prices we could get back for contracting.
Right.
And we couldn't get people interested even to submit really a quote.
Yeah.
We crunched the numbers about 3 years ago when the fire station here was talking about closing it down before it closed down, and it doesn't pencil out.
No. You got to buy the trucks, you got to open the station, you got to hire them.
You got to, LAFCO won't let you do it, first of all, but second of all, it just doesn't pencil out.
Marion, anything? Bill? Mm-hmm. Public comment? Chief, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, now, let's go back.
Well, I think you have some more presented.
I forgot you. Supervisor Pifor's office. You disappeared around the corner. I forgot you were here.
Sorry.
I apologize.
No. Okay, just a couple updates. I don't know if anyone's been over the Antioch-Nedgely Bridge lately, but they're doing some construction. So if you have future plans to go over the bridge, I just wanted to let you know that the bridge is closed from 8 p.m. to 5 a.m. 7 days a week. And then during the weekday, they're doing one-way traffic control from 9 to 3 o'clock, Monday through Thursday. So if you have any plans to head over the Antioch-Nedgely Bridge, plan accordingly, because it's a mess. Next thing is the Diablo Sail and Power Squadron is hosting a two-day boating course that meets educational requirements of the National Association of State Boating Law Administrators. And classes will be held on March 29th and April 5th in Walnut Creek. Classes are open to the public and designed for all boaters. And a reminder that successful completion may reduce your boat insurance as well. So I have some flyers that they sent me, and I can put them in the back if that's okay with you guys. So if you live on the water, you have a dock, obviously. And if people are interested or residents are interested in having dock address signs, we had an inquiry in our office asking if the county can do signs, and we can. It would be a white sign with blue numbering and lettering with the seal, just like our street signs out here. And it would be $50 for a sign, or if we do a group order, it could be $40 per person to do the signs. So If anyone's interested, I plan on doing an order at the end of the month. So if you want to try to get the cheaper rate, you can call our office and we can coordinate if you would like to get an address sign on your Docker back porch area. And that's all I have.
Any questions? Are you putting that out into the press, or has that already gotten into the press so people will see that?
No, I haven't. I'm trying not to make a business out of it, but it's just kind of a friendly informational thing.
But you're reaching
there's someone
12
here.
People here.
If
you're trying to get a bulk order together, it's probably.
Well,
I mean, there's a lot of people.
I see on the newsletter.
Huh?
I see on the newsletter.
Oh, yeah.
I was thinking you could advertise that in the newsletter, but I don't. It might inundate the county.
Well, hey, they need work.
Yeah.
Well,
they just won't take lunch that week.
You know what? It's the Public Works Department who would be preparing the signs. Do you mind if I at least talk to them and see the best way, a course of action to get it out to the communities and how they want to handle it coming in?
Or even
for the 12 of us here, if you would like a sign.
And
like 40
or the
just so we can get the good rate.
Yeah. You might contact the yacht club and then put it in their newsletter.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You're trying to keep it for the public.
It is a service.
No, I'm not.
It's not a fundraiser.
Otherwise, I wouldn't
so.
Be here.
Well, it generates business for the county, but at least you're breaking even and the guys are busy.
Yeah, it's just a cover cost.
Right.
It's
right.
Not a money-making business, but
sir, any
if
comment?
Someone would like to address
them. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Go to court, Chair.
Yeah, he's on next. That's on me. Hold on. I got to get back in here. Okay, we do, isn't code enforcement further down? Let's see, no, we have it right now.
He's here.
Oh, here it is. Code enforcement, hello.
Hello, my name is Joe Lozado. I'm a senior code enforcement officer for Contra Costa County. I'm your new code enforcement officer from this area since the cutback. I now handle all of East County. That includes Bethel Island Knights and Oakley, Byron, Unincorporated Antioch, and here. In the month of February, I issued 10 notices to comply for building without permits and 12 notices for improper storage of a recreational vehicle.
Is that within Discovery Bay or is that within your whole territory?
No, that's just Discovery Bay.
Thank you.
I'm a busy man.
Can I ask you a question? Why I don't mean to interrupt you. I couldn't help but notice because I keep one of my car carriers over at Bon Gusto's over in the, and I saw the red tag on the door.
That was considered Byron. I didn't count that one.
Oh. You don't count Byron?
No,
I'm
not
in the
Discovery Bay enough.
But my question is, the red tag remained on the door for a day or two or three, and I see the red tag is gone, and I know that it fell off the door, and they're back working on that building again. I'm kind of curious what's going on over there.
I spoke with the owner. He's the same guy who owns.
He's the attorney that owns it, yeah.
Right. He was out of town when the project started. He's on notice, and he will be paying double the permit fee plus the fee for that remodel now.
He works all night.
Yeah, that's fine. He can cover it all up, and he's going to have to uncover it. So, and after he pays, that permit right there is probably going to be, with the fines, an additional $6,000. Bless it. If he starts covering up work, the cost of uncovering it.
And recovering it.
Exactly. So sometimes if he wants to play that, he can play that game. I also been in contact with the ABC about his license and his work without permits. And the fire department's also been contacted, and along with environmental health.
Perfect.
So if he wants to go down that rough road, it's going to get real ugly.
So attracting a little of attention turns into a lot of attention very quickly, I'm assuming then.
Yeah, that was a difficult one to actually catch because most of the work is going on at night, but it is going on during the day. You don't see them. But
the guy's living around the back that does most of the work.
They do all the work out of the back, but I pulled my vehicle up and I sat there for about 45 minutes waiting for the mouse to make a noise, and then I got him.
Put your cheese out and got him, huh?
Yep, a little. They were scraping a building, put the roof on it.
How long is it allowed to keep your construction project fenced in Discovery Bay? I see a couple of
broad talking about Discovery Bay Boulevard.
I don't know, but is it done?
It's getting close.
It looks like it's done their living.
He's
there.
Allowed to have it fenced as long as it's an active permit.
Oh.
And then what are these signs in everybody's front yard that says constructed by, and they're there for like 5 years? you know? Is that that's really, called, that's not a real estate sign. That's called...
No, that's called advertisement.
Yeah.
Now, if I start receiving complaints on those, I'll go take them down.
You could take one right now.
Yeah.
You're filing a complaint?
Sure.
Which I'll give you my email. You know about the fence over
there? I don't know. I just keep driving by these... It looks like I'm in Oakland or something when I see these fences around property.
It's the one. It's the one across from our from our other office down on Discovery Boulevard.
Yeah, oh, that's been there forever.
It's
a nice property.
That's a house that's set back in, and the fence goes around it.
They've been working on it for like. It came to this board a couple years ago as a development request, and it looks like it's finally slowly.
I think Chris is just grumpy.
If you remember, it was going to be three-story or something. Yeah. That was the issue.
Any questions?
Yeah, you want to share the U-Haul story?
Oh, I wonder if they rented that U-Haul from there.
They were sleeping in it? Yeah, I was thinking about that when you said it.
I was wondering. That was one of the other notices that I issued. I issued our Discovery Bay mini storage for being out of compliance of the development plan for renting U-Hauls.
I was wondering how they got away with that.
They didn't ask about it.
Illegally.
I was wondering. The trucks are everywhere, and I know the guy tried it on Byron Highway, and they chased him out of there a few years ago.
Yeah, I chased him out of Byron, then I chased him off the Balfour.
Yeah.
I've chased a few U-Haul.
Have they indicated they're going to try to get a permit?
They are submitting for a development. He's going to go pick up the application for the development plan tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
I made a call to him today because he just got back in town from a business trip. Informed him that I saw a couple of those U-Hauls, which I didn't want to see. I've informed him of that at 5 o'clock, the time I got back up here about 6, checking up on a couple of little things. And while I still had some daylight after 5 o'clock, I was trying to get a couple more notices. The U-Hauls were hidden again.
That will come to us for comment prior to the permit being issued, won't it?
Mm-hmm. It should.
Okay. Because I don't think that's a good idea to have that.
It is allowable use for what's going on there. It's just he's going to have to modify his development plan. Now, when he modifies that development plan, I imagine it's going to have more conditions on it than... You can ship
not parking them along the wall for free advertising.
No, that's been curbed now because he's been put on. I gave him a notice to comply, but I also wanted an extension on to apply for the development plan. I gave him an extension with the specific notation that no vehicles will be visible from a public roadway or thoroughfare.
Even in the new development plan?
I'm pretty sure that would be one of the conditions.
And then the other question I have, I'm sorry, were you done?
I'm done.
The other question that I have, and it just, I don't know if it's grandfathered in or what, but that huge sign that they have on outside
that
one, of their...
That one's with their original development plan. Yeah.
And so there's no way to bring them into compliance with...
If he applies for this new development, they can probably address that as well.
How do we make sure that gets addressed? Because that's just a big old ugly sign.
It's on the corner of Newport.
It's right on. No, it's right in front of the wall. But it's like plywood. It's like 20 by 40.
It's right on Highway 4.
Yeah,
where he was parking the U-Haul.
You would make that comment. So when you get in front of the board, you can make that comment. So to go to the county.
Now he was kind of on the phone today when I was telling him I'm not too happy with you. I saw those U-Hauls again. I said you need. Talk to your managers. I see him again, and I'm going to issue a cease and desist.
I thought that already happened. Okay.
No, that I was allowing them to operate until they did their modification under a condition that
which they violated.
And they violated.
Sure.
They violated when the man was out, and he's been up front with me and pretty respected. But I think all in all, when you start seeing the dollar signs on this project and how much, it's $2,500. $2,900 just for the application plus my additional fee because I kind of doing without the proper, so it's $2,900 plus another $1,400 for my fine, and then whatever conditions we put on them, landscaping, signage, it's going
to
be a
costly. I'd love to see the size of that sign reduced.
The U-Haul thing, a friend of mine owns a U-Haul franchise. This guy, they make nothing on those trucks. This guy's not going to spend thousands to keep that franchise. They don't make enough.
No, I'm already into it with them for probably $6,000. So
exactly, and they don't make it. The return is terrible. That's why my buddy gave up his franchise.
Yeah.
I'm going to develop this.
Appreciate your hard work on that, though.
Any questions? question?
I have one more.
Yeah.
I was at your meeting, so I think it's important for all to know about the signage that people are putting up, like the dog sitting thing and what you've done about that.
Yeah, we Discovery Bay is unique in the signage up here and the little signs and some of the... I received complaints about some signs, and then I don't receive complaints about the sign next to it. Because we consider that to be profitable for the community or whatnot. I don't operate that way. Signage is signage. If I'm going to pick on one, I'm picking on all. And so that keeps me out of court. Because if I start being selective, I'm going to end up in the courts for selective enforcement. And I don't want to try to explain to a judge why I was doing that.
Do we have a low signage problem compared to other communities, or do we have a high signage problem?
Probably low compared to other communities, but have larger scale problems. I mean, when you have front yards that are... I worked in every district in Contra Costa County. I just came from North Richmond, so signage looked good over there.
Any other questions? Comments? Thank you very much. We appreciate you coming out tonight.
All right. Yeah, no,
thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, Bill.
Okay.
Mr. President?
Let's go back to Gregory Harris.
If we could, he's actually the first item under new business in action. So why don't we go ahead and do consent and then go to Greg?
Yeah, that's fine. Okay. Can I get a motion for the consent calendar unless there's anything you want pulled?
Yeah. We'll move.
Can I get a second?
Second.
Any comments? Call for the vote. In favor?
Aye.
Thank you. Okay, business and action items. We'll go back to presentations. Gregory?
Well, Greg's coming up to the podium. As I mentioned to you, I think last week we received the preliminary draft of the NPDES permit that we submitted back in, I want to say, May of last year. And we received that preliminary report. We've gone through it, and we need to have comments back by Monday. This is on the preliminary document. We'll have another time to comment once it's open for public review. But Greg's going to go through some of the conditions and some of the changes as it relates to that new permit.
Okay, Gregory Harris, Herwitz Engineering, District Engineer. So I was happy to let the agencies bill first, because there is a lot of, I would say, maybe some controversial items in the new preliminary permit, and they should take some discussion and interaction so that everybody understands what's taking place. Your NPDES permit is your governing document on the wastewater side of your operation. So it describes how you operate the treatment plants, how you operate your collection system. And it's required by law to be renewed every 5 years. And every 5 years, the regional board addresses current political concerns, as well as, and maybe environmental issues, as well as issues that environmental groups may have raised related to operations of treatment plants and discharges to the Delta, et cetera. It was no different this time. And now, of course, in accordance with this permit, the district had requested a flow increase to accommodate the community members within the district boundaries. And this permit addresses that as well. So there's several key elements occurring in this permit all at once. The requirements have gotten more strict, and they have financial implications for the district, as well as this flow increase. So we're going to kind of break it down in pieces. I've got a little chart up here to simplify the bigger picture items related to the permit, and I'd like to go through those with you, and then we'll go on to submit a subject related to this permit. So to get just sort of oriented, the primary things that our permit covers are the treatment of the wastewater and what's allowed to be discharged to the river. So if you look at the chart up here, you see that we have an average monthly limit, you know, like there's a limit, you know, like a speed limit, you know, what we can discharge. And in this first item is what's called BOD, which is biochemical oxygen demand. And that puts a limit on how much biochemical oxygen demand your sewage can have before it's discharged to the river. Your current limit is 20. And the preliminary permit as written is lowering that standard to 10. And then I'll get into option two here in a second, but let's focus on option one and what that means. And then similarly, TSS is total suspended solids. So that's like how cloudy the water is, how much stuff's floating around in it. And your current limit is 30, and the new permit is lowering that standard to 10. Okay, copper is how much copper literally coming out of the pipes and things in Discovery Bay, how much copper is in that water. And the limit is 30 right now, and they want to lower it to 44. Nitrate as N, which is a byproduct of conversion of ammonia in the process. Current limit is 73, and they want to lower it to 10. And I'll get into what all this means here in just a second, but we'll just finish them off. Ammonia is in the wastewater. It comes in as a byproduct of humans and any living animal. Ammonia is in the wastewater. Current limit is 10. They want to lower the standard to 4.7. And then the last big item, total coliform, is the amount of bacteria, coliform specifically, floating in the 100 milliliters of water. So they literally take 100 milliliters and they count the bacteria. That's how many of them. So 22. They want to lower it to 2.2. Okay, so what does this mean? So at the color chart here, I indicated in orangish, basically what's a big deal? Okay, the orange indicates you cannot comply with that limit unless you build filters. All right, it's something that's anticipated in the district, and it's in the master plan as likely at some point. But what's important about this is you can't comply, period, unless you go build. So that's what the orange means. And so those three limits right there are a real set of handcuffs relative to filters. You're going to have to build filters if that limit stays in the permit. Okay, and then that wasn't such a big surprise because we knew that it was possible, that it was likely. And it went in the master plan as a likely thing that might happen. It wasn't in your bond fund because it wasn't a requirement at that time, but it was listed as a likely, and so it got into your CIP. It got into your revenue study. It got into your revenue study, your rate study, okay? The surprise on there is the green one, okay? The green one is a surprise because a little bad luck. Sac Regional had a big fight with the regional board. So Sac Regional, you know, Sacramento, they discharged 200 million gallons a day of wastewater. And they got in a $1 billion fight with the regional board and lost. So they have to spend $1 billion, to treat nitrogen. They just lost that, like, last year. So they're actually hiring consultants and going off and spending $1 billion. Stockton's permit is going down at the exact same time ours is. And so the regional board is like, okay, we just beat up the big boy, and now we gotta make sure that everybody else, and who's the next biggest would be Stockton, they're making Stockton do the exact same thing. So Ben walks in lowly Discovery Bay, and they're like, well, we can't treat people differently, so we're going to make you do it too. Okay, so that's kind of like how the logic's rolling at the moment at the regional board. So they've now proposed this limit of going from 73 to 10. Well, the impact of this is it wasn't planned for. We hadn't thought about it. 2 years ago, it wasn't a concern. No one was talking about it. Now all of a sudden, it's a big deal. The regional board won their lawsuit, or won their battle, I should say, with Sac Regional. Stockton's being forced into it, and now they're basically, as new permits come up, they're kind of re-uniformly backing those rules down to everybody. So what does it mean? Well, okay, filters in the master plan, you know, that's a year old now or so, that was finally adopted a year ago. You know, the estimate to build the filters was about $4.6 million. Okay. We did a quick back of the envelope and said, what might it take to comply with the nitrate limit? And, you know, roughly it's around $3 million. Okay. So that's $3 million the district didn't know about and didn't see coming. You know, and it's not in any developer fee or, you know, there's no revenue generation for it at this point in time. Okay. So the official preliminary permit is option one, is listed up there right now. But staff chickened out, and so staff said, came up with two permits, option one and option two. In option two, they relaxed to the nitrate limit. Everything else is the same, but instead of 10, they changed it to 31. They picked 31 because you can meet 31 with your existing process. Okay? And what their proposal to the regional board is going to be is, you pick A or B. You know, and so the regional board's going to say, you know, your board, just like them up there, they're going to say, and there's like, I think it's like 15 of them, there's a lot of them, but they're going to vote, and they're going to pick one. Staff's recommendation, though, is going to be option one right now. Okay? So, you know, you can kind of get, like, the political campaign going, or you can push back, or, you know, whatever. I mean, I'll get into what our options are for going into this. But, you know, so there's an opportunity to push back and try and get some mediation going on here. But at the moment, your draft permit is what's listed under option one. And those are sort of the implications of that. Now, there may be some tricks and things we can do to kind of help comply in the short-term limits, buy times, and things like that. And that's kind of what we want to get into and talk about strategy a little bit with the board. You know, get some direction on a few items, and you know, basically, I'm going to let you know what we're attempting to do, and you know, that's why we're here to talk this out. Okay. All right. So the big picture thing is there's two permits being proposed: option one and option two. They both hurt. Option one hurts more. Okay. Option one, the filters weren't a surprise. Nitrate control is a surprise. Okay. All right. Some other things that are common, doesn't matter which permit you're in, but it's common to both of them, is they recognize they're going to give you a time limit because they know physically you couldn't do it. So like they passed it on you right now, it'd be like, okay, we're in violation. You know, we can't invent filters from scratch. You know, we can't invent nitrate control from scratch. So they're going to give you a time limit. They haven't committed to the time limit in the document, okay? Many times it's like 5 years, okay? But they're talking about, maybe they're talking tough at the moment, but they haven't said, we haven't committed to a time period yet, you know, kind of thing. So we don't know what the time period is going to be for compliance. Now, the other part of it is your current flow is still limited to 2.1 MGD average dry weather flow, which is your current permit right now. But the nice thing about the permit, you know, if you say there's a bright side, they have actually allowed your flow increase. So they're saying, under certain conditions, if you meet those conditions, you guys go ahead and you get your flow increase to 2.35 MGD. So if you are able to physically build the unit processes you need to handle that flow, okay, but here's the kicker, and the new permit limits are met. Okay, so the new permit limit is 10-10, you know, 2.2. Okay, they're all 10s, in fact. The new permit limit is all 10s, and it says you built your filters and your nitrate control. Okay, so you're kind of in a box here, right? So the good news is they're basically granting your flow increase. They're buying off on the, we did CEQA, and we checked some boxes, and the whole smoke and mirrors, and like, fine, you get your flow increase, but we want you to meet your permit limits before you get it. That's the way the permit's written right now, okay? So that's also common to the language, okay? And then on top of that, they're like, hey, we want a bunch of plans, pollution prevention plans. We want to talk about mercury, nitrate, BOD, TSS, total call for salinity. Go write a plan for all those. Okay, some of them not so bad, but other ones are going to be, you know, they're annoying. You got to go do plans. It costs money. You got to write them up. You got to have staff done. You got to, you know, kind of stuff. And then on top of that, let's submit some more reports. pole effluent toxicity, methyl mercury control study, mercury exposure reduction, biosolids use in disposal plant. So again, some more studies. Okay, so those are like the DMU, and actually their new concept is they're gonna make those plans you do every 5 years now. Because they were doing it, and then agencies would like do it one time, and then 20 years would go by, and it would be updated and stuff like that. So basically, they're like, every 5 years, we're putting this in everybody's permit. Go redo all your plans, you know, kind of thing. So those are sort of the options of the permit that's happening. Those are the common language that's happening. And then, you know, this is the schedule. And then after I get through this, we'll discuss, you know, where their idea is here. Okay, so schedule. Tentative order. So right now we have what is known as a preliminary draft. Okay, it's only between us and the regional board. Nobody else has seen it. Okay, and it's technically we're supposed to comment on factual errors. Okay, we're not supposed to like complain about our permit conditions. We're supposed to like they got the name Discovery Bay spelled wrong. That's a factual error, right? You know, and they they said we're a 10 MGD facility or 2.1. That's a factual error, right? That's what we're supposed to comment on. But we are going to comment on everything because. You know, once the draft permit gets out, they've actually never taken one of our suggestions. I mean, we've been this, you know, every 5 years we do this, right? So every 5 years, once that draft permit hits the street, it's done. You know, it's like, you know, we comment and it goes down and that's what happens. Okay. So the tentative order is out due March 24th, 2014. So we need to, and then it's planned to be adopted June 2014. Okay. So it's a fast schedule. They're ready to go on this. Now, that's good news in terms of certainty. I mean, on June 14th, you're going to know. They're likely going to know in March, okay? Because
I know right now.
Okay, but June 14th, you're going to know. We all have certainty. You know, that maybe that's good. All right, so we got comments due Monday on the preliminary draft. Okay, but we're not going to just talk about factual errors. You know, we're going to complain about everything, and we're going to give our best shot to try and move something. Okay. Some things that we are specifically requesting right now in the letter that we are preparing for Monday is item A. So we're going to say, look, we want option two to be the base option. Can that be your staff recommendation, option two? So we do the filters, but we get the relaxed permit on nitrate. Okay. Can we have that for option one instead so that's the staff recommendation and that's the default? Because if the board gets up there, everyone yells back and forth, SPIF's there, and we're there, and then, you know, a lot of times it's just, okay, whatever's the default, we'll just vote that. You know, kind of. So we're trying to get the default more in our favor. On the phone they said they won't change it, but we're going to put it in the letter. And then we're going to ask, another subtlety is the total call form limit. Right now our limit is 23. Building filters will really help make sure we made that. In fact, if you follow our violations, almost all of them are called for. Like 90% of our violations are called for. Putting the filters in would easily help get us under the 23. But the state's upping us one, and they're saying, well, hey, if you put filters in, then you can be a full Title 22 facility, and you can comply with 2.2, not 23. Well, the difference on that is, now we're right back to, well, we'll comply 98% of the time, but there's going to be these little burps that, you know, 2.2 is a pretty low number. And so, whereas we could cruise at 23, they just notched up a knot, you know. So we're going to argue at 2.2 limit. Okay, now just as a point of reference, we had an incident last week that was a violation of our NPDES permit on total call. While we were recording that data, we decided, let's go take data in the river. See what the river is to see if we can show we're not impacting the river at that point in time. So we discharged 500 last week for about 6 hours. So we discharged 500. The background of the river was 1,600. Okay. Our permit is 23 and they want to take it to 2.2. Okay. So clearly we're not affecting the river with call form. You know, and by the way, even 1,600 is a low number. Your wastewater coming in is 1.6 million.
Is Stockton and Sacramento pushing the same numbers we are, the same percentages and numbers, or close to them?
Yeah, they are on nitrogen, but Stockton, Furman would know. I don't know if they have filters there. And I know Sac Regional doesn't have filters, so no. But all the rest of the plants, all the rest of what they call Title 22 plants, or the Title 22 plants that have filters and UV disinfection, they are 99% of the time, they have to do 2.2. So that's why they adopted. So, well, everyone else that has filters has to meet this, so you're going to have to now. So, you know, it's kind of like, oh, we're going to make you build filters. Oh, now that you built them, here's your new permit. You know, so they're doing both to you at the same time in the same permit. Okay. So at the moment, those are the two primary requests that we have in the letter we're drafting for Monday, along with any of the factual things, you know, like we find some factual thing. All right. Some other things going on. We are trying to set up a meeting with management because staff is nice enough to say, I ain't changed up, but you can meet with our bosses if you want. Right? And so we have so we're trying to set up that meeting before the 24th so that we can hopefully maybe divert something before it gets, once it gets tentative on the street, the people like to back off. You know, we even found, like, even when their math's wrong, they like, you know, they don't like to back off.
Would it be any better off if all the municipalities that were involved in this all approached them at the same time, all with the same complaint, or all with the same request, instead of having just us stand by ourselves doing it?
I don't think so, because that they banded together before, but it still comes down to the individual permit. And once the real thing is, once somebody falls on it, then what happens is if they don't enforce it to everybody else, they get turned around and get sued right back again, saying you're not enforcing it on everybody else. So like Sac Regional, they said their problem is, so they said, oh, this is a big problem. We got to control nitrogen. You go pay $1 billion and do it. Sac Regional finally knuckles and said, okay, we'll do it. All right, but then they look around and they say, well, wait a minute, Stockton's 55 million gallons a day. You didn't make them control nitrogen. So they know, and if you don't make them, then you're being arbitrary towards us, and they get back in a fight again. You see how that works. And so everybody watches every permit. So everybody knows what's going on. And what happens is once they start falling, then they turn around and they what they call making uniform permits. So they try and make them all uniform based upon that policy decision that was implemented in the trial case, if you would, the initial case that created the situation. On the 2.2 limit, that's what everyone with filters has, but we think it's completely unnecessary and just creates another possibility that we'll go spend money, have better quality water, and then still have an issue with the regional board every now and then. You know, it's like, how many times are we gonna get fined, guys? Especially what you think.
What about on the nitrate level in the background in the river? I mean, come on.
Well, you know, they're saying it's nitrate impacted, I mean, exactly. we're arguing with them on the science. Now, the uphill battle we have here, and believe it or not, it is a question on the form you have to fill out when you submit, you know, your 5-year report, you know, the report of waste discharge. And the question is, what is the median income for the community served by the facilities? Okay, your median income is $94,000 a year. Okay, that's almost twice the state average. Okay, especially for, you know, the regional board. So the regional board often adopts, and has in this instance adopted, an attitude of, well, this is perfectly possible to achieve. That technology's been around a long time, and Discovery Bay can afford it. All right, so they actually approach it from that perspective, okay? So, you know, we are going to try and argue, hey, you know, Sac Regional, they got 150,000 people to lay that off against. You know, they got 1 million people to lay that off against, okay? $1 billion is a lot of money, but they got a lot of people to lay that off against, okay? We're a smaller community, and, you know, we'll do our best to argue, but that is a mindset, and it's a mindset we talk to them, and there's a reason the number's on the form for that exact reason, you know. Okay, so we want to talk to management.
Sorry.
We want to talk to management, and, you know, we may want a coalition of maybe us and a board member. You may want a group. You know, express your desires to them. And we'll talk strategy here in a little bit. There's a thing called an infeasibility analysis that's allowed, and that infeasibility analysis allows you to argue for more time. Okay, so it's going to be pretty hard to say it's not feasible when they do it all over the state. Okay, so that's pretty hard to do. Okay, but you can argue time. I need time to implement this. Okay, sure. And you might even say 10 years. I mean, you could, you know, theoretically, I need 10 years. you know, I can't do it in five. We just did a bump. We got a lot of story. We got a good story. You know, or maybe we need five. As a minimum, we have to submit the feasibility analysis just so we get 3 to 5 years on these permit conditions, you know, kind of thing. And so that's that. We have to do an infeasibility analysis on every single constituent. So it's nitrogen, TSS, BOD, everything we lowered that we can't comply with, we have to do an infeasibility analysis and present that to them so that they have a legal basis to turn around and say, okay, you got 5 years to do it. You know, otherwise it's a C&D and you got to do it now, you know, kind of thing. So
this is by Monday you have to do this?
The comment letters by Monday. We have to have the feasibility analysis before the 24th, before it hits the street. But I'm saying the 17th. Okay. So they need a week, you know, they need a week to like, okay, you know, go back and forth on that, you know, and then essentially we're gonna argue for as much time as we can. Okay. All right, and then last ditch, Hail Mary, presentation to the Regional Water Quality Control Board, and you know, we argue, okay, staff screwed us, can we get option two? I mean, that's what you're going to argue. Okay, so you know, and just cuts, you know, whatever our reason is, you know, we're gonna say it, you know. And so that's sort of the actions. So that's sort of the schedule. There's some, you know, implications. There's dollars. There's real dollars here for the district, okay? And there's also one key strategy that's elemental to this. And in talking with Rich, Rick Howard had a question of me, and that is, we might be able to pay for some of this stuff if we could get some roofs in here with some fees collected, you know, to help pay for some of this stuff. Is it possible that we can get the interim permit to let us increase our flow to build some houses, collect some fees, help pay for this, and commit to these facilities at X point down the road, you know, kind of thing. It's not business as usual for them. However, in talking with Rich Stoll at Stantec, who's been working with the regional board for 4 years, you know, he says they may be willing to wheel and deal. You know, they might be willing to wheel and deal because they understand it is a lot. You know, it is their policy now. I mean, the nitrogen's their policy now. That's what it is. But it might be that if they felt we were going to go along with the plan, but we just wanted more time, they might work with us and allow that kind of an action. If it doesn't, what that really means is we cannot expand beyond 2.1 MGD. That means all of the flow that we have left at the treatment plant is all dedicated to Hoffman by contract. Okay, so there is no more development of any kind allowed in Discovery Bay until you build the filters and take care of the nitrogen problem under the current permit. Okay, so instead of the $4.5 million that we were thinking, you know, maybe developers come up with the cash and they give it to the district to build the stuff, or you know, however it is, you know, there's a catch chicken and egg thing, right? You know, now it's got three more on top of it, you know, kind of thing. So, you know, there's some implications for people that were talking to the district about building homes. You know, and there's implications for the district. Now, the key is, regardless of whether you go for this flow increase, those limits are in your permit. Okay? It's kind of like, here's your limits. Oh, and by the way, there's a piece of candy at the end of the road when you're all said and done. When you're all said and done, you get an extra couple of, you know, 0.2 or 2.35 MGD.
I think the point that you made about increasing building to help pay for it is probably a great idea, but the other side of that coin is, most of the builders aren't ready to build. I mean, yeah. Cantages is probably, what, 5 years, 4 years away, probably, maybe? 3 years?
2 or 3.
And even the one I'm against, which is Newport Point, it's only 67 houses. I mean, it's not, yeah, like it's a, not like it's a ton of money.
Yeah. Now, what we were originally thinking, when we ran up collection fees, I thought Newport Point and Pantages, didn't you think they came in like $4 million or something? It was like $4 million. So it was almost the filters,
yeah,
just the collection fees on it. But what we proposed to them is, hey, lay an assessment district on yours, pre-fund your fees. Okay, because remember, they're worthless. If we don't give them a new will serve, they got nothing. They have zero. They have nothing. Okay. And we told them, look, it's who's going to be banker? Is it you? Are you the developer's going to be banker, or are we going to be banker? You know, someone's got to front the money before we can issue a will serve. We have to know that we legally comply, you know, with the law before we can issue a will service letter. That's the way it is in an agency, right? So the question is, who's the banker? Well, those two projects, if they lay down a simple assessment district, and there's just two people right now, so it's pretty easy. You know, they could lay down assessment district, float bonds against their property, pre-fund their development fees to the district. That's it. And then they're just making a payment. So then they're just making a payment. They're borrowing the money, essentially. Now, it's only 4.5. It's only 4.5. Originally, when we thought, or it's only 4? So what is it?
3.5?
Okay, so it's 3.5. So originally, when it was just filters, it seemed like, okay, we could squish the last million somehow, you know, look around, you know, see what's going on. It's a more complex problem if the nitrate is involved. So it may be that we can talk to them and say, we'll put the filters in before we expand, but let us do nitrate X years down the road, you know, or something. I mean, obviously we're gonna have to do something, we're gonna argue something, but we should be prepared to like give something to get something, you know what I mean? So, you know, right now they're like, you know, here's the way it is. We're gonna go talk to the like management, the upper guys, we're gonna make our pitch. And we want to hone that pitch down and focus through on what's in the best interest of the district. But without the, remember, without that development, you still got to build it.
Yeah, but we're pretty much in a driver's seat here. They've spent a fortune already.
Oh, the developers?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, yeah, I mean, yeah. They didn't spend that to walk away from it. And if we're going to let this go, and at this point, are they aware that they cannot build anything unless we agree, unless we expand?
They're aware without a permit expansion that we cannot provide them a will serve unless they can get it from Hoffman. That's correct.
I'd say we're in better shape than we thought. That they're going to want to build.
But they can't sell it. I mean, they can't even sell the product to someone that does want to build because we can't give them a will serve without a permit.
Both developers are very much aware of the filter situation, but they're not aware at all of the nitrate situation. So while we have the numbers and we've been holding off, if you remember back in October 2012, we adopted a new capacity fee study. Had been done in a number of years. Well, we're going to be coming back to you once all of this settles out, because we weren't sure exactly what they were going to do, and these projects will now be dropped in. Now, the filters are in there, but this isn't in there, so we'll be coming back to you at a point in time in the future within the next, after this permit is approved by the board, to adopt a new set of capacity fees to recognize these costs and anything that might be thrown at us as a result of the permit.
What is one of the methods for reducing nitrates?
Reducing nitrates, well, there are a couple ways to do it, okay? And there are, the $3 million is, again, it's just rough, because we had to just, you know, it's not like we done it, but $3 million, what that means is we built some basins directly in front of your oxidation ditches. And we take a piece of the flow out into that basin, and we biologically treat it, and then we put it right back into the process, okay? So we gotta construct some basins, we have to construct piping, some pumps, you know, it's a very well-known process, it's very doable, but you know, you gotta build facilities to do it, okay? There is another method that we could do with maybe not building those facilities, but it takes away capacity of your oxidation ditches. So, you know, we could try and do it in your existing oxidation ditches, but it's gonna take capacity away from you. And so there's always a trade-off, you know, like, let's put it this way. If you're gonna say, zero new development, we're not gonna allow new development in here, but I still don't have to apply with nitrate, well, we have a little bit of capacity for that new development because we're building third ditch and we're doing all this stuff, right? Well, you could steal from that capacity and try to reduce your cost right now if you had to do it just with the community that you have, you know. But then you wouldn't be able to accommodate new growth because you took some of your capacity and you tried to do it in the tanks that you have. I mean, there is a process where you can do it in the tanks you have, in the oxidation ditches that you have. And it's been done that way before. It's not quite as good, but it takes away some of your treatment capacity to do that. So there's trade-off. I mean, there's just trade-offs in here. Realistically, the path the district's been going, you have to spend the $3 million because, you know, you're counting on servicing everybody in your service district. You know, that's basically, you know, the master plan said, what do we need to service the people within our boundaries? You know, and that's the 2.35, and that's what you're going to need, and that would mean you know, we build these ditches. Now, if you're going to say we're going to stick a 2.1, then maybe we can do some stuff in the ditches and try and cut down the $3 million, and maybe it's $500,000. You know what I'm saying? Where we do some modifications to the ditches and some stuff like that. Okay.
But if we do that, then we get no additional fees to pay for the filtration
exactly.
system that we need.
Everyone pay. That means everybody in the existing district picks up the whole cost of
exactly.
the filters and the whole cost of the. Of
so that's
whatever
even a greater amount to pick up by it because
yeah.
it's the $4.6 million instead of the $3 million.
Yes.
Picking up.
Uh-huh.
A couple of questions.
Yeah.
First of all, when did we receive this report from? When did we receive our permit?
Last
paid
Monday.
Huh?
Last Monday. So February like 25th. The Monday. The not the 3-3, but the Monday before that.
Last Monday.
Secondly, just so by putting in the filters, the two things that the filters are going to address are the TSS and the total coliform, correct?
Yeah.
And putting those filters in will bring those down, except you're saying the 2.2 is a little ridiculous, but
I mean,
what are you saying isn't ridiculous?
We're going to argue for 23. You know, it's not ridiculous, but you know, the state says, you know, most people comply with 2.2 even though they're right on the edge. You go right on the edge and comply with 2.2. But they let's put this: they're going to pick 2.2 or they're going to pick 23, but they ain't picking anything in the middle because that set a whole new precedent. You know, we might argue 23 based upon we have 1,001 dilution in Old River and it's 1,600 to start with.
Well,
and we're at 23, you know,
didn't
but
they
I thought we were.
I'm sorry.
Aren't we at 21 for that? We never.
No, we're
23. I'm sorry. Yeah, no, we're 23.
It says 22.
22.
It says
no, 22. I'm sorry. We're 22.
And we're always over.
Well, they're always over. That's like our you know, our normal worst case high. That's why we tick it every now and then. You know, that's why we blow it every once in a while. Because our, you know, if you do a statistical number for the whole time, every now and then we're just slightly over. So, the 23 is not what we do every single day. The 23 is on occasion. That's the number we hit. So that's why we have total coliform violations.
We usually lower than that.
Yeah, I mean, we on average we run in the teens on that number.
What kind of sounds to me like we need to get more into this and this should be a meeting in itself?
Oh, hey, you know, actually, I can show you the actual permit. You know, it's this thick double-sided. So actually, you know, there it is. That's the permit, you know. But there are some real issues. So there's things coming up. One is we got to issue a letter. So I'm working with Rick and Virgil and Stantec to get our story straight for that letter, but that's going to go in Monday. Now, technically, it's only, like I said, it's only supposed to be on factual errors, but we're trying to put our whole story in there. And then the real thing is we're trying to schedule a meeting, unknown date at the moment, with at least somebody in upper management, above staff, to attempt to pitch some kind of story about what we're doing. But what should be most important is, what does the board want to do? You know, I mean, you know, things are coming. Let's put it, it's clear.
Well, we don't have a choice with regards to the filtration. We can't refuse to not put in filters.
We can't refuse anything. We can request that they maybe delay them, how long, and then the question is,
well, we
what
get
does that
2.35.
mean? What's that?
Then the question is, do we get the 2.35?
Exactly. So can we throw up, hey, you know, that's what I'm saying. If you go up there and make a deal, guys, we'll build the filters and we'll build the nitrogen. But I need 10 years to do it,
yeah.
But I need houses to pay for it,
sure.
Right? So I need to get to 2.35 as part of the interim limit, and I guarantee you we will commit and sign a contract that says they're up in 10 years. Example, that's an example of what you might say, okay? Or you might say, we'll commit to the filters now, give us a 2.35 now, and we'll commit to nitrogen, but we need 10 years on nitrogen. It wasn't even on our radar. It's $3 million. We already got to spend $4.5 million. We just spent $14 million rebuilding the whole plant. We can't go back to ratepayers this quickly and ask for a revenue increase. You know, I mean, so there are a couple options that we can argue. Traditionally, the permit's been the way it is, and that is, you guys want something, you want the development, you gotta pay, you gotta build the stuff first. You know, but it is a lot, and then maybe they'll make a deal. I don't know. You know.
Ideal? I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Yeah, I agree with the strategy of option two becoming their option one,
yeah.
Without a problem. And I also agree that we should probably do a two-part deal. Give us 5 years to get the filters in or whatever the number is, and then the 10-year, because we'll have to, at 5 years, we have to reapply again, correct?
Yeah.
So then the nitrogen kicks in, and we get another 5 years to get that done for the same reason, and I think the strategy of putting some roofs out here helps pay for it, makes sense. And also the ability to augment, you know, and argue the fact that, well, just because we have a higher household income than other areas, we only have 6,000-7,000 houses out
here
to pay for it. I mean, it's unrealistic. So I think all of those strategies that you've been discussing, that, you know, I don't have any problem with them, but I agree, we have to push back. We can't just roll over on it.
So one
of the concerns that I would have is, especially being that our permit comes every 5 years, anything that they give us a 10-year window on at this point, who knows what's going to be in the next permit?
Yeah,
it could put us so deep in the dirt that that way we could have 6-7 more million to put on top of it.
Yeah, it is a possibility. One thing I told Rick, I said, the good news about this permit is right now there actually isn't anything left. So by the time you treat nitrogen and you put filters on, you're one of the most advanced plants in the state of California. I'm not saying there isn't something out there, but
that's exactly another argument to be made. You're forcing us with this permit to become one of the best treatment plants in the entire state, and we're one of the smallest ones out here.
Yeah.
You know, it just, the costs are going to kill us. So
where do we go from here?
So where we go from here is back on the schedule. We're going to issue district comments. I'm going to strategize with Rick and Virgil about that letter that goes out on Monday, okay, and what we want to say. Probably the biggest policy decision is, are we going to play Let's Make a Deal? And if we're going to play Let's Make a Deal, the board's got to be bought into what it is we offer up. Okay. Now, if we play Let's Make a Deal, it doesn't mean we're going to be successful. Okay. They could leave the permit exactly as, we can go tell them all this stuff.
They can't make it worse.
They cannot make it worse. So we can go tell them all this stuff. But if we're going to play Let's Make a Deal, they're going to ask for guarantees from the board about what you're going to do. Okay, and so we gotta be on the same page about what you might offer if you're gonna play Let's Make a Deal.
Guarantee.
Okay.
When are we gonna have that conversation?
Well, we would definitely want that before we have our meeting, because that's when you're gonna present Let's
tonight.
Make a Deal.
Guarantees.
Okay.
So what? So we guarantee that we're going to do this if you give us our 2.35 so we can put sticks up in the air. And what are they going to do? Cut them off when we don't meet the guarantee?
No, they'll issue a C&D when you haven't built your filters on time. And they'll start fining you $3,000.
Well, I don't have a problem with filters. The filters are coming anyway.
It's whatever else. I mean, whatever you agree to, at some point, let's put it this way, at some point you're building nitrogen. Maybe we can, at some point you're building filters, right? Right now they're saying do it the next 5 years. You know, or whatever time frame they come up with in this permit, they haven't given us the exact time frame. They left a blank date.
Well, they're probably asking us to give them that time frame based on financing. And I think that if we can agree to the filters at 5 years and the nitrogen at 10 years from now, that gives us enough time.
The only trick is, I think you could, if you weren't pushing the flow increase, that's the one that's going to be questionable is,
well,
will they? How long will they postpone those improvements and give you?
I think if you hit them with the science on the nitrate, along with the practicality of keeping a district afloat.
Uh-huh.
I mean, keeping it fiscally sound. I mean, we have reserves. We have things in place in case something happens.
Yeah.
We don't want to take all that money and then have no reserves or anything else left. Just to comply with something that the science doesn't prove.
Yeah.
Again, as Bill said, we're split within we're limited households. Our sphere of influence, our property lines are drawn. We're not expanding.
Yeah.
We have no place to go. We have no more money to bring in.
The only problem is you're standing up there with twice the median income saying we don't want to pay for it. So we're arguing hard that it's ludicrous whether you can afford it or not. We're saying whether you can afford this or not,
there is a policy. Give us the mean of the Bay Area, not of Fresno.
And you also you got to look at the amount of homes you have.
Yeah, I'm just saying.
Is that what it is?
I'm not saying that sometimes it seems rather arbitrary, but But telling them that we can't afford it is an uphill battle.
Well, I'm not saying that we can't afford it. We can afford it over time.
Right, so what we're strategizing about is, hey, we just put in reliability improvements. We just spent $13 million on reliability. We just spent $1 million to reduce salinity on a new well. Okay, we just did a revenue increase. We just did a blank. You know, we can't go back to citizens today and say, do it all over again, guys. We got
we
more
just
spend.
Borrowed $14 you know. Million. Dollars.
Yeah, so, you know, I'm not saying there aren't financing practicalities that we can't put up to try and slow things down. The only kind of mix in the whole thing is what happens to this flow increase while we slow things down.
Well, I think flow increase has to be part of that package.
Yeah.
And that's the reason that we want time. It's not that we won't do it or don't want to do
right.
it. We just have time to do it.
Yeah.
And also, the chloroform issue, I agree with you. We need to push hard on that one so that we don't have a violation. What it pops up at 2.2 or whatever the violation is.
So 2.2 is a pretty low number.
Right. And it's unneeded based on what's in the river. But what is the average fine when we go over?
It normally runs, it's $3,000 if we blow it a little bit. If we blow it a lot, like 540 is going to blow, it's going to blow the daily max, and it's going to blow the weekly average, and there's two samples pulled for the week. So it turns out it's three violations, all 3,000 each, so it's $9,000. So
right.
If you blow it a lot, it's $9,000.
Right, well, that's another argument from the standpoint at 2.2, if we come up and have a violation, that's costing us more, and it's unneeded. It's unjustified. It doesn't do anything. So allow us the ability to retain, you know, put the threshold of the fine a little higher that's reasonable so that we're not impacted again negatively from a financial standpoint to help us pay for this.
Yeah, and you know, that's good. We'll argue that. The thing we're battling is their policy decisions, right? So that's the thing we're battling. It's like they put science aside. And they said it's our policy now that we're going to go after nitrogen, and it's our policy that we're treating everybody the same, and this is how we started treating other people, and now you guys are third in line.
Well, I think that's what the big thing is going to be here. You made that point earlier, and you're absolutely correct. Whatever they give us, they got to give everybody.
Yeah.
If they give us 10 years to apply, they got
to
give Stockton.
You think you guys are lying? You got to see what Stockton's going to have to pay to do this.
And they're bankrupt.
Okay. They're going down. Their permit is the same day as ours. It's going to be a circus down there. Okay. Their permit is the same day as ours.
I don't know how they're going to pay for theirs. They got the money.
Maybe we ought to talk to Stockton a little bit on strategy too.
You know,
Fairbanks
ought to know people over there. That's for sure. Yeah. So we got a lot of nod heads over there.
I got a question for you, Greg. The letter that goes out on the 10th, does that go to Marshall?
Yes.
Marshall.
Yes.
Okay. That's good. I'm going to suggest that what we do is between now and then is we'll come back to the board at the next meeting on the 19th with a series of recommendations that we can take to the board or take to that management meeting so the board can have an opportunity to weigh in.
Okay.
That gives us a chance to get the letter in to the state on Monday. We can have the infeasibility analysis in on the 17th. And Greg will then have had an opportunity, or Rich from Stantec, had an opportunity to talk to Jim and see kind of feel them out a little bit and see where they stand, and that might help us base our recommendations going forward.
Yeah. And we spoke with Jim Marshall this morning. His staff recommendation is off at option one right now, so that's his starting position at the moment.
I think ours should be option two. Just all they have to do is change the option to one and two.
Yeah.
It's a
I'm all for it.
Yeah.
I'm all for it. Yeah. Anyway,
that's
we're fighting
fair.
Hard for you, but this is much more significant than some of the other permits. Some of the other permits have been kind of mild. This is not a mild change. Okay.
All right. So, at this point, Bert, do you have a question?
I do. I do have two. If that's all right with you, is that in the past 5 or 6 years we've been doing wetlands trials. And my feelings are is that we should indicate to Mr. Marshall and the board that we have been doing this because this impacts other regional boards as well as other POTWs throughout the state. This primarily with our results on pharmaceuticals, even though it's not a permit on anybody, but it's doing, we are stepping ahead, looking at trying to solve that issue. They may relax something. It doesn't hurt to say, hey, we've been in the background here trying to solve issues. We're not just trying to meet our permit.
The only negative I see on that is now all of a sudden they're going, well, we've requested everything out of everybody. Let's go after pharmaceuticals.
Well, that's a hot issue throughout the U.S., not just the California.
All right.
But I got to believe there's credibility or favoritism on us for doing that part of it. But I also want to let the board know, because a lot of you are new, that when it comes to the adoption in June, between March 24th and June, there will probably be many other agencies who are representative by grassroots groups that are going to be contesting your permit. So just an FYI. Even whatever it turns out to be, option one, two, whatever, there will be groups out there that are going to contest it.
Yeah, they're going to comment. Like SPA-F's going to stand up and say, we need option one times two.
What's playing that way?
SPA-F, the Sports Fishermen's Alliance.
Yeah, we've heard of
it. California Sports Fishermen's
Alliance. So they have literally stood up on every single permit we had. They've written in on every single permit we had. They've actually sued us.
Well, but that would mean they're doing it to everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, they do it to everybody.
Yeah, they do it to everybody else. Everybody knows them. The guy looks like Santa Claus.
The last couple permits have been two other additional groups, one from Westlake, one from Metropolitan Water.
Right. Yeah.
And if you recall, we had an interim like revision to our permit. Two other agencies outside of it commented us because it set policy. They actually commented on our permit because it set policy. So, you know, other agencies look around and they know that once one permit starts going down, this uniformity problem is going to come to everybody. And so other agencies that have the money to monitor everybody's permit, not just their own, you know, they jump in. I mean, if they see something, I don't want that my way, they'll jump in support of you, you know, saying the board's overstepped their bounds, they shouldn't do that, and stuff like that, you know, that thing. But unfortunately, because SEC Region lost, you're next. Yeah. That's what it comes down to.
Chair, if I can, just a couple of questions real quick.
Yeah.
So the 2.35, is it an automatic increase under option two?
Yeah. Under all options, 2.35 is automatic as long as you comply with whatever permit limit they set and you've built the facilities to actually treat the flow. And so I can write a letter to them that just says, we will be able to comply with the new permit limits. You know, so like if they give you 5 years to comply with whatever they set, the permit as written gives you 2.35 MGD as long as I can write a letter saying our treatment plant will do it. Okay.
But it doesn't require, I'm just looking at common items of significance. It says if the filters, we get the 2.35 automatically if the filters are constructed and denitrification facilities are constructed. But under option two on the first page, it doesn't have us building the denitrification.
Yeah, and you wouldn't have to. That's
okay.
Correct. So it in this particular case, the permit is written, the way the draft original permit option one, that's the permit right now. They had this other option, just like, well, here's another option if you don't like option one. But,
and that's my second question. Is there any narrative in the permit as to why they gave you option two?
Yes.
What's the narrative as to why they gave you option two?
Well, at the moment, they kind of did some, it's written like this. Based on the infeasibility analysis submitted by the district. So they're saying, we're anticipating you're gonna send us an infeasibility analysis on nitrate. We're seeing blank, 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 and therefore we're picking 31. So basically they threw it on us to say, you tell us why it should be 31 instead of 10.
But they've already started the negotiation.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's my point is, I don't think that's very common. I don't know, I mean, the number of permits that I've seen. I don't know that you've seen option one, option two.
Oh, it's a whole new thing. It's the last three permits they've done, and it's like that's what staff's doing all of a sudden. It's brand new. It's like literally like the last three or four permits. Now, what the advantage to them at staff level is if someone went to the board at the board meeting and successfully argued in front of them, you can't adopt this permit today because of one reason, this one little thing, and they go like, yeah, okay, they backed off. Then they have to go recirculate a whole new permit, they got to do the 60-day notice, they got to get everyone comments again. You know, if they change it at all, because they already circulated to the public, they can't just change it. You know, so all they can do is adopt it or not, and if they don't adopt it, staff's at ground zero again. Got to change whatever they're going to change, and then they got to recirculate 60-day notice, get it on the agenda again. So to speed that up, staff came up with this idea.
Yeah, that's just going there. This is staff's way to give their board the ability to keep moving forward.
To keep moving forward, exactly, because and both will be circulated. Both will be circulated, and both will get comments.
Yeah, and then put the burden of proof to go to the lower level.
Yeah.
On the district that's being approved.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, if we just use their strategy and argue that direction, maybe we could be successful.
Right, and we're hoping we can push it one way and then say, well, there's a more stringent standard. At the moment, on the phone, he's like, I'm not buying it, but be happy to submit that.
If they're not going to blink yet until they see
they're not
something.
Blinking yet.
I
suspect maybe there's a let's make a deal up there. I don't know.
I would think so based on their new strategy kind of thing.
They must be getting a lot of heat, I would think.
Yeah. Well, staffs at that level don't care.
Yeah.
Not them, but Cosmodyne.
All right, what do we decide? At this point, we're doing what now?
I think what we, Rod and I have been discussing it, and I think just in the conversation here, with the letter going to the board on Monday, and after this conversation, I think that we can develop a series of recommendations and ideas. What I would suggest we do is convene a meeting of the Water Wastewater Subcommittee to discuss those prior to coming back to the board on the 19th, and then meet with the management of the regional board sometime thereafter, but at least give this board an opportunity then to fully weigh in on whatever those recommendations are. And with your two committee members, I think that who've been involved in this process and are familiar with it, then it might be very helpful. So I think that's kind of what we would recommend at this point in time. We can certainly do a separate meeting if you wish.
If we don't need it, if this will work the way you got it, that's fine. If everybody's in agreement with that.
Greg, are you okay? Do you think that would be?
Yeah, the only unknown scheduling thing is we're probably going to end up taking that meeting whenever they give it to us, so I don't know what date that is right now.
And that was
so.
The thing I was thinking is they're probably not going to take it 5 days before the tentative order is out, and so the 19th would be after you'd likely have the management meeting.
Yeah, well, we were saying,
that
meeting's
going to be in that week between
the
18th.
It might even be before the 17th. I mean, let's put the
Monday.
It's going to be, I just told him, we'll take the meeting any day in a meeting.
Tuesday.
You know, and I have no idea when it is. That's the only thing about that.
If that's the case, then I would call for a special meeting.
Yeah, you need it before the 19th.
Yeah. We'll shoot for that day or sometime after the 19th.
How much notice?
But if it happens before that, we can call for a special meeting.
How much notice will they give you?
You know, I'm assuming that they'll be curious. We're asking them right now, so you know they're going to check people's calendars and then get back to us.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm assuming we got a week notice.
All right. Well, there's no action to be taken on this. This is informational. Okay.
Yeah.
Gregory, thank you very much. Are there any other questions before we go? Okay, let's move on to the next. Is that complete yours, or do you have more?
He's got one more.
Yeah. So okay. Go ahead. Are we gonna move?
You get the new agenda item, right? It's an actual agenda item, I think.
Oh yeah. Okay. Let's move down to G1. G1 award of Motor Control Center contract for the secondary improvement project to Ruff Brothers Inc. $24,422.27.
Okay, so on this next slide here. So when we built the solar dryers, there's a picture of them on the right there. We contracted with Rao Brothers, you guys should remember that, to build the solar dryer. They also, at the same time, built that little white building in front of it. And that's called, and in that room, we put the motor control center equipment, electrical equipment, that drove the solar dryer, okay? So as part of the secondary project, we need, by coincidence, pretty much the exact same size building to hold motor control equipment and other electrical equipment that supports the third oxidation ditch and the other things that we're building as part of that project. So just to kind of show you photos of it, you can see it's a metal structure. There are metal beams that hold it together, and it's got insulation and metal siding. And then inside we hang lights and everything. And so it's an actual full-blown building. And inside we have electrical equipment, you know, kind of thing. So what we recognized, and we have bid, like, I would say, at least half a dozen times, we've bid middle buildings here in Discovery Bay. And we've always been amazed at how expensive they are. You know, we've always been surprised at just, wow, these things are pretty pricey. One thing that's pretty pricey about I'll say engineered buildings, which is what this is, because it, you know, like, you know, we do it, it's like, hey, we have to have structural calculations for the building, we have to meet code on the building, and you're going to submit all that, and we're going to review it, and it's a custom building. So metal buildings are tend to be custom because, you know, who knows what shape the building's supposed to be. And so, you know, they go through and they custom up, they literally custom up the whole building, and then they do the calculations for it, and they submit it to us, and we review it and approve it. And that's what happened here. And we actually rejected those calculations like 3 times, and it took us 3 months to get this, not only the main structure, but a little metal building approved too. Okay. So then we're saying, okay, now that we've actually gone through all the structural analysis and done all the review on that building, and we need a building the same size and shape, why don't we just skip to the end game and buy the metal building and save everyone the headache of having to redo all that and save the cost of it? So I asked Rao Brothers, what do you do to just give me the bare building exactly like you gave it to me before? And their quote was what's in front of you here. Now, we would assemble it, which is why I have 3 pictures here. So a person puts up the framing, and Rick, if you roll back one, so they put up the framing, you know, and then they and then the contractor would put up siding and insulation, as you can see here, and then that's what the building looks like, you know, when you're all done. So that building, the material, it comes out at about $100 a square foot for material, and I'm guessing same amount of money to build it. You know.
How big is that building?
It's like 200 square feet, yeah. So it's like right around 100 bucks. Yeah. So it comes out about $100 a square foot for material, and I'm assuming it's going to take them the same to build, so it's about $200 a square foot building, okay? So engineered building, the structural foundation's been designed for it and stuff, so that's what it is. That's the proposal, you know, before us. Now, in the contract documents, we're bidding the secondary price out to bid right now. We told the contractor the district's that we're gonna have a building and you're gonna build it. That's what's in the contract document now. But we can change that because we can issue an addendum or we can do some things, you know, if that district decides to do something else. But at the moment, the district's sort of providing the building to the contractor. So we're either giving him a metal building that he constructs, or if the district chooses to do something else, we're building a building. You know, because we don't have a building designed in the documents that they could say, oh, okay, the contractor will provide the whole building from scratch at the moment. That's not in the job at the moment. So we have details of this building in the project, and we've told them, we're gonna hand you that building, and this is how you build it. That's kind of what's in the job now. But we're open to answer questions, or if the district wants to do it a different way, you know, we can talk through that.
Just a caveat to that is, as they were going through the design, they needed to add more electrical equipment to what we have existing today. The existing MCC building, where Furman and his staff is, does not allow that room to have that. We would have to extend that building out, and so it would be a lot more expensive to extend that building out than it would be to build one of these down in the plant so we can bring the power, because our problem is that we have to get 3-phase power out to the place, and our conduits between where the new oxidation ditch and new clarifier are pretty much filled up. You'd have to open trench to put new conduits in to get that. So we're looking at just putting one high voltage wire go to this building. From there, it goes out to the oxidation ditch. So it would save the district a lot more money by doing this.
Is that why it's $100 a foot for a metal building? Because it has all the extra electrical?
No, it's $200.
The $100 a foot is just for the building.
Wow, you guys, nothing, it's only $50 on the street. Building. It's only $50 on the street.
So nothing in the building.
Or yeah. Butler building.
Well, you know, all I can say is I've tried the Butler building like 6 times in Discovery Bay, and it's never been $50 when I was done. So I'm not disputing that. I'm just saying, like, we tried to do dewatering, we tried to do, like, even just like a cover, like, even just to get a metal cover has been amazingly expensive. Now, you know, basically, we looked at this and said, okay, this seemed like a reasonable way to do it, okay? I'm open, you know, I'm just trying to tell you the parameters of how we got here. You know, if the district thinks, hey, we can get a building cheaper than that, then maybe. All I'll just say is the budget estimate for the project right now is $4.7 million. Okay, so if we could save $5,000 on the building, or $10,000, I mean, you know, let's put it this way. I'm thinking it's going to be, it was 22 to buy it, and let's say it's 22 to build it. So that's $44,000. So if we could save 10, that would be a 20% cheaper, right? Maybe we could save 20, you know. I don't know if that searching and trying to find alternatives and then get everything done and just is worth that. But I'm you know, this is your decision.
Yeah. The question that I have is, just so I understand, why does it have to be a metal? I was in the building the one, so I've seen it, and I understand the way it's constructed. Why does it have to be a metal building?
Only because all the other buildings are metal. That's why.
But
I mean,
we're constructing a building for a pump right now out of traditional framing.
Yes.
Over.
Right.
We're
running a little tiny one in front.
Right. Well. Wow. Why can't we do
we're
one
doing
of
that one out of wood? Well, okay. Right. So we're doing that one out of wood because the district's building it themselves. Okay. So Virgil and his crew are just building it. Okay. So, you know, Virgil wouldn't build a metal building.
Well, I understand that, but why does it? We're saying, well, we're having the metal building because all the rest of them are metal. Well,
yeah,
it probably lasts longer than the wooden one will.
Right. Okay. And I don't disagree with that. You know, we've got to look at 50, 60, 70 years on the decisions we're making. That's fine.
Yeah.
Next question, why can't we just run a trench and conduit back into this current building and set that new controller that we need in this existing building and just run the conduit to where it needs to go?
By our estimate, it'll be far cheaper because it's so far away, and the cost, it isn't just a conduit. Okay, so right now, coming out of the new building that's right there that we're plopping down, you know, there's 30 conduits coming out of it in an instrumentation duct bank and a power duct bank, and those duct banks are, like, you know, 3x3 and 4, and they're all concrete reinforced. You know, it's in our opinion significantly cheaper to build a new building nearby where you need the power and just run just the main feeders over to that building than to run all your individual feeders. Because, so, like, if I have 20 motors in there, a motor is 3 power phases plus a ground, and then all the control wires for it too. Okay, so I might need 10, 12 control wires. So I have 20 wires for that motor. So for every single motor in there, I have to multiply 20 times, say, 20 motors. So that's 400 sets of wires and feeders and cables I have to feed all the way across the site over to here. Okay. Whereas if that's closer, I read those 400 wires, but they go much shorter distance, and then I just feed a couple big cables all the way across the site. That's, so the economics come out, I mean, our estimate is at least $100,000 cheaper.
Even in the ongoing operating costs because of the shorter distances, we're using less power?
I'm sorry?
We're using less power if it's closer to the...
Yeah. In theory, you know, I could calculate a less
marginally.
Power, but it is technically less power, but I wouldn't think.
A
couple of years ago, if you recall, we built almost a lean-to, a cover over the UV building to protect the equipment that was there, the need that was outside 24/7 in the elements, and that cover, just the cover alone, was $18,000. So it's not an inexpensive process.
And then that's what we found. It's like, you know, okay, I mean, that little cover, that thing is like, I don't even think it's 100 square feet, right? It's like 100 square foot. And it's not even a building. It's not even a building, okay? It's just...
Yeah. I'd like to make a motion that we accept the staff's recommendation and get the building built.
I'll second.
Well, purchase it.
Purchase it. It's in the general contract to build it. But yes, this is to purchase the building.
And what's the timeline for the total project to finish this?
The total project, we're giving the contractor 18 months to do, and this is the last big project of the master plan, right? This is the last big project. It's 18 months is what we have in the contract.
Okay.
Do we have any further discussion?
This is the oxidation.
I did. All I was trying to just come up to speed to understand why we needed the building and why we couldn't utilize the existing building, and that was part of my question.
Yeah.
So now I understand. If you got you've got a ton of wires that have to go out.
I was thinking
that the controller, you know, we were by the internet or whatever was changing whatever.
Okay, now if I could just deal with that, you're right. Yeah. You know, I mean,
but you need hard wire, and there's a ton of wire.
Right.
Can I get a second?
Second.
You got it.
Any further discussion? Call for the vote. All those in favor?
Aye.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Thank you, Greg.
Item two, discussion of possible action regarding 2014 Earth Day and Family Festival staff.
Farron would have normally been here for this, but as you know, she's at the CPRS conference in Ontario, Canada.
Do you want to hold us to the next meeting?
No.
Ontario, Canada?
She's in Ontario, California.
All right.
We don't have parks in Ontario. It's all sand.
Basically, just go through this real quickly. The Earth Day event is scheduled for April the 25th this year.
26th.
We're looking... I'm sorry? 26th. We're looking at a budget of about $9,000. $6,500 of it we plan on generating from either in-kind contributions or hard donations. We did that last year. We were successful in getting all the donations to cover the costs that we were trying to reach. This year's project is going to essentially be a little bit more scaled down in terms of the overall day, if you will. It'll be a shorter day. There's a schedule on there. And the two projects that we're looking at, one is more of a curb appeal project for the community center, make it look better from the outside, just from around the building. And the other project would be, if you recall, where the, if you go to the next page or the third page down, there's a drawing where the kids zone used to be, that we would temporarily turn that into a leash-free zone. We get a lot of
people. Where the heck did that come from?
We get a lot of people that are out there. In fact, I was over there the other day for yoga, Kevin, and there were people out walking their dog, and so we, it's a good timing. A couple of years ago, if you recall, the board had the workshop out at Timber Point School. We eventually would like to move it to Slifer Park, but in the meantime, we felt that this would be a good, inexpensive alternative for that. So we're just looking for board consensus that we go ahead and move forward with it with the budget. It is budgeted. We have the money in the budget, the $2,500, and then the $6,500 in anticipated donations. Those would be both in kind and hard cash.
I have a question. What on the dog park issue? And if we construct it and if we build it, they will come, I assume. But my question is, what if the users aren't cleaning up after themselves? How much additional staff time is it going to take to kind of keep this thing, hygiene of it, I guess, is where I'm asking, and, you know, the extra lawn mowing and all the stuff that goes with it. Do we have staff to do that?
Generally speaking, pet owners that use leash-free parks are very responsible pet owners. That's why they're using the leash-free park. They clean up after themselves, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't not always happen, because I've been to leash-free parks and it's there. And there is always a maintenance day that is identified during the week where the park is closed on a Tuesday or Wednesday morning for a couple of hours. Go in and do the mowing, to do the cleanup and that sort of thing, replace the bags. So that is that would be an added item.
Is there a current sprinkler system within there that works? Or are we going to have to?
Yes, there would need to be some modifications to the irrigation because we would be putting in also a.
You're leaving the building there?
That building needs to go.
Yeah, I. Kevin, I'm not sure if Farron was planning on leaving the building there.
Okay,
I'm going to suspect.
We'll just have a board decision on this.
Well, first of all, there's a community center committee that never was brought into the picture in this and had no idea, even the chairman of the committee had no idea that there was going to be a major modification to the community center property. I'm a little curious as to why that happened that way or what the purpose of the committee is if they're going to be surprised with it. Secondly, it's close to the pool. You're going to have dogs off leashes and kids playing in the pool. How much noise is that going to cause? I don't think that's a great idea. You're only about 30 feet from the pool.
No.
It's ridiculous.
This is not well thought out at all. And it's further than that.
No, well, not what I'm looking
not
at
much,
here.
I don't think.
There's a picture of it.
I've seen a picture.
You don't think that's, you think that's more than 30 feet? Okay, 40 feet. Still, you got dogs barking and kids playing.
A dog runs 40 feet in 2 seconds.
Where did this come from? This property was never been discussed as being an animal property. Out of the blue, you drop this. You want to just gloss this over and bring it to the board and say this is why we're asking for approval.
That's why it's on our agenda, so we can discuss it. Chris, you have something?
Yeah, I just
I think the Earth Day is an important project. I think we've had some good attendance in the past. Sometimes that's a few bucks that we're going to spend on an event. And I think that every park could use a little attention right now. And I don't know why we can't mobilize neighbors and local local parks to take on a beautification project. As far as the community center use, there is a community center committee that wasn't, we didn't talk about this, but that whole south side of the property, I think that's a great Earth Day project. But you know what, that area out there has, from the barbecue all the way to the west, needs some attention so that we can have outdoor gatherings there without tripping over sprinkler lines and those things. I've seen a lot of bushes getting torn out of there, and I'm not sure why we're losing all of our coverage there for the fence line, but I would say this area would be, you know, my recommendation to the board someday would be to keep that as an open group
event,
activity
picnic,
area.
Whatever.
Yeah, you know, I'm glad doing some demo on Earth Day to get that kind of work done, but, you know, that $9,000 should go a long way on that side yard there.
I think part of the problem I'm having is we spent a lot of time and a lot of community meetings discussing where and how to put in a dog park, and now all of a sudden it's just approve the budget, we're putting a dog park at the community center. What was the point of all the effort that was put into all the decisions and all the meetings that we already had where we decided where we were going to put a dog park? I don't understand how this can...
There's attached to the report, there's a memo that Farron had written to the board explaining all of those items. If you want to, it was an idea that came up as part of the Earth Day discussion, and it came up at the last minute, and so it was being brought to the board tonight.
Here, why don't we do this? Because it is an idea, it is on the agenda, let's take a vote on it today. That's pretty much the easiest way to do it. Give me a motion, and we'll...
I'll make a motion.
Hang on, is there any other discussion? Well, there's no public, any public comment? Give us a motion, we'll vote on it.
Okay. I'll make a motion that we do not include the dog park as part of Earth Day, as designed, and that we expand the scope to include our three major parks for Earth Day activities. And, you know, I know we have a budget, or you're trying to get some funds together. The community center can be
give us a motion.
All right, I'll make the motion that we not accept the dog park at the community center, part of the Earth Day project.
Well,
you want to amend the motion?
Make the motion to have Earth Day.
Just amend
it.
We will have Earth Day. The town will participate without the dog park.
Are you a second?
I'll second that.
Any further discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Thank you. Okay, let's move informational items. We have none. President's report, director's comments. Kevin, any comments?
No, Hugh covered most of it. I will say that there's a good chance that we aren't going to have, you know, there's no obligation by the county to provide us with fire district, and at the way it's going now, they're not going to be able to keep any firemen.
Do you think they're getting money, 11th hour money like they did last time?
No, absolutely no way. And here's the problem. He talked about the November, putting on the November. By that time, it's going to have to be $135 to make up the money that they've already lost by the time they got to November. So they really need to go for a $200 assessment or go for nothing.
Get it.
Well, it's worth it.
Yeah, I agree.
But I don't know if they can educate the people well enough to do it. So, no, that would be the consensus of my report.
Chris?
Hi. On February 20th, I attended the Byron Union School District. They had a workshop on the local control funding formula model, and the governor has mandated that the local districts come up with a plan to allow more control of the funds, and it's based on a lot of the English learning student population and also special needs children to bolster the funds for the school district. The school district is still on a path for the next year right now to be deficit spending. Thank you.
Thanks. Bill? Don't have anything. Marianne?
Yes. I attended the county code enforcement meeting, and there was a copy of the notes that I took. And he pretty much, I had him mention the things that were of interest.
Okay. Anything else?
Oh. Thank you.
General Manager's report.
I have two quick items. One, yesterday, I forwarded to you this afternoon or late this morning the section of the LAFCO Municipal Services Review that applies to Discovery Bay. I've gone ahead and reviewed that subsequent to sending it to you and made some comments and sent them back already. And then they will be the entire document will be available, I believe, in about the next 10 days to 20 days for public review. This is our review, like the preliminary review that the regional board had. This is our preliminary review at it. I'm happy to say that if you had a chance to read it today, it's actually very favorable for us. There's no recommended changes at all. In fact, it was maintained the status quo. The second one is just a reminder that on the 18th, we will be having the community center open house in Ribbon Cutting with the chamber, with the ribbon cutting at 5:30.
It's at on the 18th, right?
March 18th.
Thank goodness, I had it down there twice, and I guessed right, okay.
That's all I have.
That I got? District legal?
Nothing major, just to indicate that it looks like this month I'm going to run into a conflict at your second meeting, and so Dan will be back. We've already decided that since I've had to sit with Dan's name, he's going to sit with my name for the next meeting. So.
Just one thing. Director Wiesen, I appreciate you going to those code enforcement meetings because I think it's important for the board to have somebody there because that's how we're funded. And I want to talk to you about some of the signage issues that he talked about at some point in the future and some ideas that I have with regards to how to deal with that.
Okay.
Committee updates. Community center open house. We just had the open house update. Is there anything else for the community center under updates? No. Correspondence?
One question. Yeah. Have the cameras been installed yet?
Oh, I forgot about that.
I believe they're going in next week.
We heard that 2 weeks ago.
I believe they were 2 weeks ago was they were going in 2 weeks. I believe they're going in next week. That was the last
time. So if they come back in 2 months, they should be going in last week.
How's our monitoring right now? I mean, there's no cameras on the wall here. Do we still have camera systems locally?
Yes, just not over there.
All right. Any future agenda items? Anybody? In that case, thank you for coming. We're adjourned.